This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We unveiled accounting in hour number one. We're sorry for that, but you're going to have to deal with it moving forward. We won't do it again until next Thursday, God willing. But we've got stuff to get into. Great guests coming up as well. But last night on the hardwood, Wes, home teams held serve. And North Carolina in a tight game against Wake Forest. I thought it was a little bit tighter than I expected it to be. But you know what? Coach Forbes got his Deacs playing hard and tough. And they made games competitive, really, for the most part. And that included last night because with 10 minutes to go, we were all tied up in the Smith Center.
Yeah, they got an unbelievable effort from Davion Williamson and also Isaiah Musius last night, who hit seven threes. It's the fourth best individual performance in terms of made threes. Ties for fourth in Wake history. Deacons hit 13 threes last night. Musius and Williamson combined for 54-73, but it wasn't enough. As you mentioned, the last 10 minutes, Carolina really started going to the block. Baycott, 14 of his 18 in the second half last night. But Caleb Love gave North Carolina a season-high 20 last night to help the Tar Heels to a seven-point win. Carolina's now won 4 of 5, Pack, and in Raleigh, will host NC State, I should say, on Saturday at 2 o'clock on ESPN.
They are trending in the right direction. Actually, the only loss of those five, I thought, was maybe one of their best played games of the year at Florida State, where that game was anybody's ball game with 3 minutes to go in Tallahassee, right, where the Noles never seem to lose a game. They've won 20 straight there against ACC teams. But I like the direction that North Carolina's going in. I didn't think they played particularly sharp in the first half, but they did shoot 55% in the second half. That's kind of been the bugaboo of this team. Can you shoot the basketball? Again, didn't make a whole lot of threes, yep, but got some contribution with R.J. Davis coming off the bench, scoring 13 as well. So I think if you're Roy Williams, still a lot of things to coach and teach, but I think he's got to like where they are heading versus what we saw in the early, yep, part of the season.
A little bit of an index card game last night too, wasn't it?
I got the index card right here. You like to show your handiwork. I got scribble all over the place. And again, it's all by hand. Listen, North Carolina shot 10 more free throws. I mean, I've seen worse. I mean, okay, that wasn't, to me, that wasn't right, one of those, oh my God, did you see the infamous ACC index card?
Okay.
Yeah, 10, you know, 10's a lot. I'm not saying it's not. If you're a Wake fan, I got 10's, we lost by 7. They shot 10 more free throws. Again, I didn't think that was the reason Wake lost the game. Wake lost the game because, you know, 20 turnovers on the road will get you beat. But North Carolina, yeah, had a huge advantage inside as far as the matchups were concerned. But I thought they shot the ball well in the second half. And you know, they played with poise when that thing was tied up with 10 minutes to go. I think that's always, to me, a sign of a good basketball team, that you say, okay, we took their shot, now it's our turn. And they go, 12-0 run, see you later. North Carolina closed the deal.
Carolina's 9-5. They're 4-3 in the ACC. And do we dare? Yes. Let's take a look. A year ago after 14 games, this year after 14 games. Pac, can we say they're turning the corner a little bit here?
I think they're a lot better than they were a year ago. And I know folks will scream at the bottom of that last thing. One loss record against AP top 25. All that stuff will take care of itself. We know what North Carolina turned out to be last season. And Roy Williams doesn't want us to bring that up, and we're not going to, because that was, you know, that's old news. This team is much better than last year's team, in my opinion.
By the way, your man Ken Pomeroy's got Carolina 188th in the luck factor.
Oh, that is the Brian Ives special. And when Ives unveiled, and I didn't even know it existed, when he unveiled the luck, are you lucky or unlucky, that one sent me over the top last year. So
that was it.
You got to be. Hey, listen, I say this all the time in football season too. Hey, you got to be really good. You got to have really good players. You got to get great coaches. You got to execute. But you know what? At the end of the day, you better be lucky if you're thinking you're going to be a championship caliber team. I don't care what the sport is. Luck does matter. You got to get some. You got to have some good things happen to you. Whether it be some calls, the ball bounces the right way, you win close games, whatever the case may be. This team for North Carolina, though, get back to the point. Last year's team just seemed like they were, you know, I don't know. They just seemed disconnected, all right? It just nothing seemed right to work. Close games, they lost all of them, seemed to. This team doesn't feel that way to me. This team looks like it's gotten better as the year goes on. And that's what good teams do. And listen, we got Roy Williams as your coach and really good players. You got great size inside. The front court is as good as anybody you'd want in the country. If you get production and consistent shooting, North Carolina can win a bunch of basketball games. And right now, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, off to Atlanta we go. Georgia Tech was coming off a pause for contact tracing and a positive test within Tier 1 of their program. We hadn't really seen the Jackets in, what, Pac, 17 days? Is that right?
17 days.
I mean, and, you know, these things have not been too kind most of the time, right? I mean, the teams come off. They're a little rusty. We said yesterday Josh Pastner felt like he'd only had about a day and a half of practice with everybody that they were going to count on. They still weren't sure they were going to get everybody back. He had indicated to me that if they had to play last weekend, they might have been down as many as 5 scholarship guys.
Mm.
Well, they took the floor last night, and my goodness, Georgia Tech went bombs away from the perimeter. Moses Wright was killing the rim again. But Jordan Usher and Michael DeVoe led a 3-point barrage. The Jackets were 16 of 26 from three last night. 16 of 26, Pac.
That is very good. Again, keep in mind, Virginia lit up the Tigers for 15 threes. The Jackets lit them up for 16 threes. And that's not some doormat you're playing against on the defensive front. That was your number one team on KenPom's rankings from a defensive standpoint. And I'm telling you, man, the basket is just gigantic. It's enormous right now for these teams against the Clemson defense. But you're going to shoot lights out like that, you're going to win a bunch of games. But, you know, not only did they shoot the ball well, though, Wes, 20 turnovers for the Tigers. So not only did Georgia Tech get it done offensively, obviously, but they got the job done defensively too. 11 steals, created 20 turnovers, a lot of points. I mean, it was really a terrific effort. And you watch that team because we haven't seen them play, as you pointed out, in 2.5 weeks. And all of a sudden you dawn on them, oh, yeah, it's Georgia Tech. You know, after a slow start, you know, they've won 5 in a row. They won 5 straight and really, really looked good last night.
Yes, they did. So the Jackets get the win. They're 3-1 in the league, now 7-3 overall. Clemson has fallen to 3-3, and they are 9-3 overall. The Tigers are in Tallahassee. The Jackets are in Charlottesville this weekend. Again, I'll go back and say this one more time. It's a big weekend of ACC basketball. There are plenty of implications. The minus 10 rebounding number for Josh Pastner's team has got to be a little bit of a concern. There's no Ben Lammers. There's no James Banks inside. Now, you hit 16 threes. The rebounding, we'll worry about that later. Well, may have to worry about that on Saturday. Virginia's a tenacious rebounding team that does a really good job at both glasses. So, might want to polish that up before you get to Charlottesville on Saturday for the ball game against the Cavaliers.
It's all about matchups, but given the fact that the last time you saw Virginia play, I just mentioned the Clemson game in Little John, the last time you saw Georgia Tech play, talk about that game last night, if those two teams stay hot, that will be a blast watching that coming up this weekend. But Georgia Tech's got a chance to make a statement, and Virginia, of course, let's keep in mind, the only team in the ACC that has not lost a conference game. That's why we've got Virginia number one in both of our accountings this week.
By the way, the schedule makers have had to make a change. The COVID protocols at Boston College have forced the BC Eagles to come off the ledger for hosting Pittsburgh on Saturday. So the ACC did the, what do you call it, the fake left, go right, Pac?
Fake left, go right.
Wake Forest is now going to host Pittsburgh at 6 o'clock here on ACC Network on Saturday. And you say, well, wait a second, how'd that happen? Well, this is Wake's bye week. Wake Forest was scheduled to have a bye. They were supposed to play Pittsburgh later in the year. So just kind of move ahead in the schedule. As Lindsey Nelson used to say, after an exchange of punts, Notre Dame has the ball. You know, Wake Forest, who was going to host Pittsburgh anyway later in the year, will now host Pittsburgh this Saturday. While Boston College continues to go through their protocol process.
You know what else is crazy? And again, with COVID football, COVID basketball, that's why we keep saying when we try to do schedules, it's really impossible. Even we could talk about a game today, and by the time we go off the air, it's been postponed. It's just the nature of the beast. I think we've all kind of gotten used to it. from that perspective. But given the amazing job, and we bragged about BC a bunch, I know on this show, and I did a ton on the radio show on SiriusXM 84 about the amazing job Boston College did during the football season in terms of the number, the thousands upon thousands of tests, and one positive test I think they had at the really at the end of the year. And, you know, their students are not on campus. And it kind of makes you wonder, you know, if there's a correlation. And granted, every day it changes as far as the COVID numbers and who gets it and who doesn't and so forth. But BC did such an amazing job during the football season that when you get news that all of a sudden BC's got to postpone hoops, you kind of go, what are you talking about? They've gotten so good at being able to prevent this that when all of a sudden you say, man, there's a hiccup here. Hey, nobody's immune to this. You know, and we're going to have more stoppages and disruptions, and, you know, it's just going to be what it is. And so that's why if you've gotten off to a slow start in ACC play on teams like a Duke, for instance, hey, you got to win games. And there are no guarantees of what is going to be played down the road in February. So puts the emphasis on teams that have gotten off to slow starts that you try to embrace as many games as possible. Wake Forest, like you said, hey, we don't have a game this weekend. Pitt can't go. Yep. BC can't go. Hey, we'll play Pitt. So you just try to get as many games in right now that you're sure of getting in, and hopefully down the road we get them all in. But, you know, you got to be realistic and think that there's going to be some more games that we're going to lose at the end of January and into February.
Yeah, and, you know, the question really becomes, how's the math work on all these postponed games? And I simply don't think there's – I mean, now, there may be a way – but even if we talk about those three-game weeks, Pack, like Florida State played the 3 and 6 days last week, right?
Yeah.
Even if you had 2-3 weeks of those, I still don't know you're going to have enough time to mix and match everybody to get these games in. And that's okay. I mean, we all have to understand that's just kind of part of the dynamic we're working through, right?
Well, listen, we had a college football season with a national championship game with a team that had played 7 games. And people were still screaming about it. But, hey, it is what it is, right? So when you do get a game, we keep saying, embrace what you get. Don't worry about what you don't have. You really have to take that mindset as a player, a coach, administrator, a broadcaster, a fan, whatever, this season. And at the end of the day, if, hey, the team that comes in first place in the ACC plays 18 conference games and the team in second plays 15, it is what it is. I mean, you know, do what you can once you get a chance to play. But to think that everybody's going to get 20 in, I think that's kind of wishful thinking, best case scenario. And I just don't see that happening.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It's a Thursday. We've given you some hoops. We've given you some stats. We've given you accounting. Still bummed out that somebody ripped off $750 million of mine winning that thing last night. We'll get into that later on. But we are now talking golf, Wes Durham. Somebody ripped me off. That $750 had my name written all over it. But nevertheless, I am thrilled to death that the Linksters are getting back to doing what they do best. And why not talk a little ACC golf? The league is awesome. It always is, always has been. We got dudes everywhere, and Florida State kicked things off this past weekend into the week. And with that said, let's bring on Trey Jones, the golf coach at Florida State. Trey, good morning, man. Appreciate you making time with us.
Good morning. You just made my wife run out of the room and grab her lottery ticket. So we're in the same boat. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. How good is it just to get back playing again? That had to be a joy in itself.
Oh my gosh, the excitement that those players had and coaches, just when you saw them on the driving range when they first got there, bouncing out of the vans. We got shut down, you know, when you guys were at the ACC tournament last year, like everyone else, and it was truly just awesome to see the excitement in the players.
Trey, it is of note that golf was not allowed to do anything in the fall. So the eagerness to kind of get back and get underway, I mean, it had to be almost like a celebratory situation. And yet I know you're there to compete, but still, just kind of some degree of normalcy for the first time since last March, right?
Oh, Wes, you're exactly right. I mean, it was you had to refocus. We're finally getting to compete again. And it was a celebratory thing. And the coaches in our league are phenomenal. And we met during the fall, early fall, when they shut us down and said, okay, what can we do to get the players out to compete again? And it was basically just start earlier was our only option. So that led to us being able to host at a fantastic place, Camp Creek Golf Club in Watersound, Florida. And the season, you know, obviously for us playing well, but I think for everyone, couldn't have gotten off to a better start.
Hey, Coach, given the fact it was the first tournament and everybody's still trying to stay in tune, of course, for the most part, you get decent weather in Florida. But to finish the tournament 22 under par, I mean, I'm telling you what, your guys really played well. And I was amazed at how many low scores we had for the first tournament right out of the gate.
Well, I think it just shows how great our league is more than anything. Because if you would have told me going out, your team was going to shoot 10 under par, I would have taken that score as a result. But I never, ever would have thought anybody would get 22 under par on that golf course. It's extremely difficult. And once again, it's just we had the best players in the world out there. The greens were soft for rain and some other reasons prior to the tournament. But I never would imagine that 22 under would have been shot out there, or a 64 from Jacob Bridgman. And when he opened the tournament, shot the course record. So maybe he set the tone.
Well, and there again, because once that 64 went up, we had to have the Clemson Golf alumni event on the show here, Trey. As you know, we had to make sure that the 64 was noted here on the program. Do you anticipate this being a different season? We've seen a different season in football, a different season in basketball. Given protocols, all those things you guys have had to go through just to play last week, do you anticipate this being a different season?
I think you have to. We've told our players we're fortunate enough to play, and there's going to be sacrifices. There's going to be things that we're not going to be able to do that traditionally we would have done or enjoyed doing. And whether it be a team dinner, Mark remembers the days with his team, I'm sure, with going out to dinner. One of the great things you do in college golf is to be able to feed them a really nice meal. But so they're eating takeouts at home, all kinds of different things. So, and you have to realize, probably like your basketball stuff, that you're not going to be full strength at every event. So you need to be ready for anything that comes up, be flexible, and just take it and go. But I do think golfers are great at that, because as you guys know from being golfers, you don't know if you're going to make a 3 or a 7, and you have to adapt and go on.
Yeah, that 7 is looking pretty familiar, I've got to be honest with you. Not so much on the 3s. You know, from a recruiting standpoint, you've had great success. You've won championships in the whole routine. You've had a ton of All-Americans and all that stuff. When you get a guy like Brooks Koepka, who now has exploded on the world scene, how has that helped you from a recruiting perspective, tying that into Florida State golf?
Well, he's a guy that people want to be. You know, when they look at this new athlete, player, how he plays under pressure, a Florida player there, you know, there he is. He's someone that they say, well, he went to Florida State. What did he look like when he went there? What did he look like when he came out? Obviously Brooks was a great player for us. I think one of the things people kind of look, well, he wasn't a great college player. Well, he was the ACC player of the year 2 times. And ranked number 1 in the country his senior year in March. So, but yeah, Brooks is great. So proud of him.
So, how's that helped you in recruiting, Trey? Just curious. I mean, listen, everybody knows everybody in the golf business. When you go to these junior tournaments and so forth, and you walk on a golf course and you got the Florida State logo on, they know who you are. But, you know, you've taken this program to another level, too. The league is so good. I mean, you got to get, listen, everybody's got dudes on these lineups. But has it taken your program from a recruiting perspective? Has it made it easier, or has it been really a non-factor because you're already established?
No question. It just gives us the credibility or accountability, whatever you want to say, of look what can happen if you come to Florida State. And Brooks will tell you that. The things we're doing here helped him become who he is. And that's helped for sure. And once again, he's a guy that big, powerful, one that people want to emulate or get to be like him. And he's definitely helped our recruiting.
Trey, I want to talk at least a little bit about the new golf course and the renovation of what you guys have down there. You got to be over the top about what Nicholas Design Group has come in and done in Tallahassee for you.
It just couldn't be a better time right now. And we're extremely fortunate that the Nicholas family, Jack has six grandchildren that came to Florida State and a son to play football, and Steve, and obviously everyone remembers Nick O'Leary, but he made this a labor of love and a priority for the Nicholas family. I can't tell you how many times they came in and they came up to visit. It was a lot more than I would have thought personally, but the end product is what I just have a hard time believing, that there's a better college golf course in the country. Our guys will be prepared for wherever we go because of this, and their gift to us and what they've left us will, I mean, it's a great name. It's a legacy golf course.
Trey, we've had Bruce.
All right, real quick. But hang on, Pac. I want to make sure I got this right. It's 7,800 yards from the back. Is that right? 78?
It is 78, but I got another stat for you there, Wes. Once you walk up onto the ninth tee, it's 4,900 yards from there to the clubhouse, if you want it to be.
Yeah.
God, do the quick math.
Are you sure wait a minute, but did Nicholas design this or did Koepka design this? That's what I want to know.
He definitely. You know what it is? It's his longest golf course. It's longer than Castle Pines or anything he did out in elevation. So, but I think that what it does for us, it gives us flexibility with wind, and the young players, what they did was amazing. Was they listened a lot. And so they would know where the tee box would go or have to go. And then they had our players come out on every single hole, men's and women's team, hit balls, and they threw pin flags down where the balls were landing and finishing. And that's where the bunkers start, and then they moved them back even further for the future. So the bunkers are well-placed. There's not hardly any aesthetic bunkers out there. They're there for a reason.
Interesting. You know, we've had Bruce Hepler and Larry Penley on, and the guys, we always like to ask them about the young players in the league because the conference is so good and so deep. And everybody just talks about how these kids now coming out of junior golf bomb it. I mean, everybody bombs it. And I know you've seen this. We talked about Koepka and how he's developed and so forth. But when you go through recruiting again, I go back to the young kids now in the young sport. Coach, do you just find that now everybody's hitting the golf ball 300-plus yards, you know, 280 as a junior? I mean, I remember when I played 100 years ago, I mean, if you hit a 280, man, you stepped on it. Now that's like, hey, that's a nice 3-iron, man. Get out of the way. It's crazy how far these kids hit it.
Oh, it is a 3-iron. That's exactly right. It is a power game, and it has gone in that direction, thanks to the guys. But there's still players that are ball control guys. John Pack is not, you know, very long with those standards, but he's had a great career. So I think it's important to understand who you are. Don't try to be someone else. Definitely you've got to be great at something. And, these athletic guys that are playing golf now that might not play golf. I had Jerry Haas on my radio show last night, and he was talking about his uncle, Bob Goldby, wouldn't tell people he played golf because it wasn't cool.
About that.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I tell you what, it's going to be a great year for ACC golf. Trey, I got to be honest with you, Packer and I, it's actually more West than Pack. We're trying to get the tower at the ACC Golf Championship one year. We'd like to be in the 18th tower, you know, kind of the kind of those guys that, you know, do the – Packer could be the analyst, of course, because he is a former college golfer. Don't you think that's a good idea? Coaches would go for that, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I'll make that happen. So we're hosting next year down at the beach at Shark's Tooth Golf Club. I say we're hosting. It's ACC's hosting, but it's down in Florida. But let's make that happen, guys.
Hey, you get me a golf. I tell you what, you get me a golf cart and a cooler, I'll be the greatest analyst in golf in the history of broadcasting.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Hey, Trey, thanks a lot. Always appreciate the time. Have a great spring. We look forward to catching up with you guys and following the sport closely as we move through the year.
Guys, thanks for having me on. And hey, I understand, Mark, the NCAAs might be coming up to your dad's course. Is that right?
Yeah, we want to put that bad boy to old Bo and just watch people try to figure out where to hit it on 18 and 17 and drive people crazy. Yeah, that's a real good idea. And forget about 7,800 yards. The only 7,800 yards up there is when you fall off the cliff. It's 7,800 yards to the bottom. Keep up the
Thanks,
great work.
Trey. Appreciate it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Many thanks to Trey Jones, the men's golf coach at Florida State, fresh off a W to start the season, and excited about that new track that they've got, which is beautiful. Now, speaking of a total breakdown of everything you need to know about the ACC women's basketball universe, who better than Muffet McGraw, who joins us right now, the Hall of Famer. Muffet, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'm looking out my window at the snow here in South Bend thinking, boy, I'd love to be in Florida playing golf right now.
But, you know, listen, you can give us that all
but
you
just
want.
Just the front nine.
Listen, no disrespect. You can give us that all you want, but you know what? You're so used to that snow, and plus it's great for your garden. At the end of the day, it's perfect for your garden. So I know how this works. You can give us the woe is me, the weather's bad. I know better than that. I know better than that. You're not fooling us.
That's
on
the
that.
Same way as a coach, right? Best
That's
team
right.
ever. Every team we played was the best team ever.
That's exactly right. We know your deal by now. All right, listen. And an interesting slate of games coming up, right? Much like the men's side, where we're starting to get some folks with some identity. We're starting to do that on the ladies' side. We knew about at the top, right? We know number one and number two with Louisville and NC State. But a team like Syracuse, and we were just goofing around during the break about it, tell you what, Q's team can score. He told us before the season, if we play and stay healthy, we can get up and down the floor and score. And, man, that's exactly what's been going on lately. Keep an eye on Syracuse moving forward.
You know, it's funny. They had a month-long pause. They hadn't played since December 20th, and they came out on January 20th and scored 90 points, made 17 threes, which is a record in the Carrier Dome for them. And then they went on and beat North Carolina, which was, we thought, maybe the 3-4 game eventually at the end of the season. So Syracuse is a team to watch. Coming into the game tonight, they've got Louisville. It's over on ESPN, and that is going to be a heck of a game because Syracuse has those freshmen that are just outstanding. Cardoza at 6'7 inside. And Tiana Monacahia, the best point guard, in my opinion, in the conference. 13 assists in the last game. She's really playing well. Priscilla Williams, another freshman off the bench, had a career-high 26 points and was Rookie of the Week this week. So things are looking really good for Syracuse right now.
Coach, is it Cardoza that's making the biggest impact there? I mean, some things, you know, and I'll tell you, you can't coach 6'7 now. I mean, that's a big-time advantage, I would think.
Well, coaches used to say that quick players can get tired, but tall players don't shrink. So if they can get the ball to her, and I think they struggled with that early on. They just played like she wasn't in the game. They need to really focus more on her. She's their leading scorer, but she's only averaging 15 points a game, shooting about 60% from the field. For me, I'm going to go inside as often as I can.
Muffet, it seems like this game has the potential of really being a high-scoring game, right? Because Louisville's put up some crazy numbers this year and blowing people out. And we talked about red-hot Syracuse going up and down the floor and Tiana, the double-doubles and so forth. Two great point guards, right? I mean, Dana Evans is out of sight. Tiana doing her thing. I mean, it really is a cool matchup if you like offensive basketball.
Yeah, it should be a great matchup. Dana Evans has the speed. I mean, she is somebody that can get up and guard. She is somebody that can score. She can get to the rim. Tiana Monacahia for Syracuse, she's more of a set it up, pass first type of point guard. So it's a very contrast in styles. But I'm anxious to see what happens at the four spot. Louisville's playing four guards and Cochran in the post. And Syracuse has that big lineup where they can go He's 6'3", 6'7". Who's going to guard that 6'3" if Louisville goes man-to-man? I think there could be some rebounding issues. I think the scoring inside. But both teams are going to light it up from the three-point line.
All right. Coach Ivey joined us earlier in the week. Kenny Brooks has had a handful of heartbreaks already. They have broken through. But Notre Dame-Virginia Tech seems interesting tonight as one of those games that could provide a boost to the winner moving ahead.
I'm hoping Kenny Brooks has some heart issues again tonight. I think that Notre Dame is on a little bit of a roll. I think they've won four of their last five. And as you said, Virginia Tech coming down to the wire just can't seem to finish the game. They have the talent. Kittley and Shepard, the best dynamic scoring duo in the conference. Those two can really score. The question for them has been, who's that third player who's going to step up? And for the Irish, they're getting more balance. Matty Westfeldt, a freshman, has been leading them in scoring. Last couple of games, she's been a little quieter, but only because the veterans have started to step up. I think the chemistry is finally coming along for Notre Dame. You're looking at some other players, Destiny Walker, Mabry at the point. They're getting some defensive stops. They're scoring off of turnovers. They're sharing the ball. And they're shooting it really well. Virginia Tech was the best three-point shooting team. Notre Dame, I think, has been second in the conference. So they can shoot it from deep, and they can look to go inside with Matty Westfeldt, who can also shoot it from deep. But this is a team that I think is really on the rise.
Florida State gets Clemson instead of NC State, which might be a blessing in disguise given how terrific Wes Moore's club is. You know, we keep talking about that cluster of teams that's not named NC State, Louisville, or Syracuse. Notre Dame making a move. Georgia Tech's been playing well. But when you get a game like Florida State, Clemson, two teams that are really kind of in the same boat a little bit where, hey, need to start putting together some W's and trying to get some momentum here for the second half of the year.
Yeah, it's almost must-win time, and it seems early for that. Florida State, a team that has the least amount of games in the conference. I think they've only played five or six games so far. Yeah. So they really have a lot of work to do because they have a new team with a new coach. They have some chemistry that they're trying to find, but they're really playing well. Unfortunately, didn't look too good against Louisville, but not a lot of teams are going to do that. But Georgia Tech, I think, is a team that everybody's looking past them. They're in fourth place right now in the conference. They've come out, they've won some big games, and they are a team that plays great defense, and they have really good balance, too.
It's interesting, too, because you mentioned, you know, NC State's currently on protocol. We've seen Syracuse come off of protocol. Pack and I have talked about it. It's been hit or miss on the men's side. Last night we saw Georgia Tech come off protocol, knock down 16 threes. Florida State came off protocol, shot 71% from the floor against Florida against NC State. On the women's side, can you kind of measure maybe how a team might come off protocol, or is it just going to be different the rest of the way for everybody?
I think this whole year is just so uncertain, isn't it? You look at Syracuse, they came off the pause and made 17 threes. I think you have other teams coming off of that pause, and they are not shooting the ball well. They look rusty. So I think for me, it's the veteran teams. The veteran teams, they can handle these sort of things. They can go a couple of weeks without practice. They know what they're doing. It's these young teams, I think, that will struggle more coming off of that break.
Coach, you've been used to being on the pedestal, right at the top of the mountain. How important is it that the ACC is number one and number two in the poll in January? How big a deal is that?
Well, you know, I think it's great for the conference because when you look at everybody's talking about the SEC and how much strength and power is in the SEC, then they're talking about the Pac-12. They're not talking about the ACC. So it's great for us to see Louisville and NC State in the top five. They've been there all year. But, of course, we haven't had the out-of-conference opportunities. We haven't had that chance for Louisville to play Connecticut and for having some of these other big games where we can say, yes, we are a great league. And I think for us, we're struggling. You're right. We have three pretty good teams, and then we have a lot of question marks. We need a lot of those teams to really step up now and get into the top 25.
So, Coach, given all that, how big then is the rescheduling of NC State and Louisville? How big is that game, not just for those individual teams, but for the collaborative effort of the league?
Well, it definitely is going to have a national impact. And I think everybody in the country is going to be tuning in to watch that game. And isn't it great for the ACC to have that sort of matchup, a marquee matchup of one versus two right in our own conference? So I think people are going to look at that game, and I think they're going to open their eyes a little bit because they haven't had a chance to see those teams. NC State had the opportunity to beat South Carolina, a team that a lot of people think right now may be the overall number one seed in the tournament. So that's a huge win for NC State. If they can beat Louisville, they're going to be a team that people are going to start talking about. Because even now, after that win, they're still saying Louisville is going to get the overall number one seed, not NC State.
And Muffet, I also think it probably puts an emphasis on the game tonight with Syracuse and Louisville, because those are two of the three ACC-ranked teams, and their offensive prowess to be able to score. So for folks that, you know, maybe haven't dialed into women's basketball yet and they turn on the game, they may be pleasantly surprised with the offensive weaponry that both those teams have and go, wow, those ladies can flat out play. And you have the potential of a one versus two, assuming Louisville can win tonight against NC State next week.
You know, it's going to be a fun game, and I hope people do tune in because these are two teams that can really score. And I know everybody likes offense, right? Nobody wants to see a defensive battle where you're winning 55-50. I always wanted to score 80 points at least. I think it's more fun for the fans. Both teams are going to get out in transition. They're going to get a lot of shots up, and it's going to be an exciting game.
By the way, we saw Jeff Walls in this different year go custom Adidas shoes. If you were still on the sidelines, would we be looking at custom shoes from Coach McGraw?
I have a pair of custom shoes from Under Armour. They have lime green shamrocks. I'm going to bring them out for you next time I'm on. My shoe game definitely would be number one in the conference.
Wow.
Okay, there we go. That's what I was looking for.
You know, men or women, yes, sir. I'm going to go all out.
Wait, you know what?
Okay.
Let me tell you. You know what that tells me? That tells me the competitive DNA in you.
Oh, yeah.
Is still there. That tells me that, you know what, you're probably going to look at, when you're going to get done with this interview, you're going to look out the window, you're going to take assessment of your neighborhood and say, you know what, nobody's got a bigger, badder snowblower than I do, and I'm going to wear everybody out right from the get-go.
Yeah.
I might even put on those custom shoes and blow everybody out of the water. You're competitive edge, Coach. That's why I love you, because it's like, you know what, yeah, you think I've retired? Nonsense. I still got it.
Hey,
you're absolutely right, but don't mess with a woman and her shoe game.
Hey, let me tell you something.
There you have it.
Two daughters and my wife, who's the greatest person in the world, I don't get near it. If they need more space in the closet, it's theirs. I'm taking my one sweatshirt and my one baseball hat and my one pair of jeans. I'll take it down the street. You're 100% right.
Hey, Coach, just for the record, just to make us guys in the somewhat south of the country feel better, how much snow do we have on the ground today?
Oh, you know, we probably have 6 inches. It's a normal day in South Bend. They wouldn't close the schools on a day like this. Everything's still open. We know how to drive up here.
It's like a spring day. It's like springtime in South Bend, only 6 inches of snow.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you that in Cartersville, Georgia, and Charlotte, North Carolina, 6 inches would be a grinding halt for 10 days.
Oh,
that's all I'm going to tell you.
It would be a grinding halt.
I think the threat of snow would close you down.
You got it. That's exactly right.
Just the threat of snow.
Coach, I have said this before. If there is a snowflake, forget an inch, a snowflake found within 200 miles of Charlotte, we will eat French toast for 2 months because there will be no eggs or bread. I mean, we're just ridiculous down here. We are soft as the day is long.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Man. Muffet, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Huh?
Flake. I didn't say accumulation. I said a flake. That's it.
A threat. Yeah.
Have fun.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I could talk hoops with Muffet forever, couldn't you? I mean, she's just – Muffet's dialed in, man.
Yep.
Dialed in.
She's fun.
Right?
When we get to normal and we all get to one big place, you know, where we can sit around a table and have conversations, it'd be fun to just chop up basketball with her, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, yeah. It'd be big fun.
Dallin Cuff, Moses Wright coming up in the Power Hour. But one of our regulars had some interesting comments. regarding how you should at least approach the postseason in college hoops.
Right.
You ready for this with Seth Greenberg?
Yeah, this was, by the way, from one of my favorite shows on ESPN Radio at night, Freddie and Fitzsimmons, Ian Fitzsimmons and Freddie Coleman. And Coach Greenberg was on there last night, Pac, and said that maybe the best plan for the best teams is not to go to your conference tournaments.
Unless your contract, the league makes you, and I don't know how the league can make you, because they said the minimum number of games you have to play is 13 to be eligible for the tournament, so why do you need your conference tournament? I wouldn't play, and I'll tell you why I wouldn't play. I'd put my team, as soon as my last game was played, absolutely in a lockdown bubble. I might even go to Indianapolis, where we're going to be staying, and practice there and make sure we're in a safe, restricted environment. Wow. Because you didn't play the season to win your conference tournament. You played the season to win an NCAA tournament, and you can't do that until you get to Indianapolis and in the bubble.
Love Coach, but don't agree with that at all. You know, you work hard to play to win a championship. Man, that means your league and the national title and everything else you strap it. I disagree with Coach on that one. So, I mean, which is fine, makes the world go round, but not buying that at all.
Sorry. Okay.
Where's my
steak? First of all. All right. 7 consecutive negatives among your tier one. How are you going to get those? How are we going to get that done in the time frame of doing all this other stuff? Okay, so 7 consecutive negatives. Is your conference tournament going to be staged with any discernible attendance? What's your conference tournament protocol going to be? Okay, the NCAA is asking you to show up. Show up. Not once you get there. They want you to show up with 7 straight negatives in your tier one pack of everybody. I mean, I understand what he's saying from that standpoint, because safety and testing negative for 7 days is going to be the critical piece of the entire operation of the NCAA tournament. And if we're sitting here today thinking the NCAA tournament's going to be played with 68 teams and there's not going to be a team that shows up in Indianapolis and on the 3rd day or the 2nd day of Indianapolis, despite their 7 negatives, doesn't pop a positive, we're kidding ourselves, right? We're just kidding ourselves.
Yeah, but to me, that seems like a separate issue. I thought the issue was, should we play in a conference tournament? I think the object is, when you say, hey, I'm a member of X team, we want to be the conference champs. I mean, I heard what Seth said, but hey, you don't play the regular season to win the tournament. Yeah, you do. Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that, hey, if you're part of a team, the object is to be the conference champion. If we're good enough to get to the postseason, awesome. We'll play in that too if we're in the mood. You know, to me, the 7 tests, I mean, that to me is almost a separate issue, which, again, that's the NCAA creating protocols, and I hope we can reach it, but I don't know if we will or not. But as far as playing in your conference tournament, why would you not play in it? I mean, it's not the question, why should you? Why would you not play in it? Of course you should play in it. Try to win a title.
Right.
That's why you play in it.
Well, what are the and to the point, and I agree with you that you should have the conference tournament. But there are going to be these leagues that don't stage a conference tournament.
Fine.
Right? The one bids have a chance to say, okay, we're not going to have it. The regular season champion, you're going to the NCAA tournament.
Great.
Now, they may play a 1-versus-2 game at the end. They may get rid of the tournament format, and I'll just throw a league. Okay, I'll say the Big South, because I know the Big South was supposed to stage their tournament right there at off Independence Boulevard, right? The old Chrome Dome in Charlotte, right? The Bojangles Arena, right?
Right.
So they're not going to do that, I don't believe, this year. I'm not positive of that, but I'm going to use the Big South as an example. So say they take the 1-versus-2 and they play a single game at the site of the top seed. They go through protocols, bang, they crown a champion, they go on. It gets different when you talk about the ACC, the SEC, the Power Fives, maybe even the Big East, the American. How are they going to go about doing it? And at what risk do you put next week in peril by staging your conference tournament? I think that's a question we've all got to get kind of comfortable with, the implications of that, because of what potentially could happen the following week. And I think, not know, because I haven't asked him, But I would think that's what he's talking about, is do you want to risk next week for the conference tournament?
I think you got a chance to play, you play. I mean, everybody's done the heavy lifting to get into that position. And if you reach the point, assuming everybody can play, you have the tournament. Why would you not? I don't understand why you wouldn't.
Right.
I mean, we've gotten this far.
No, I'm with you.
You've gotten this far. Yeah. You might as well close the deal. Let's go have a tournament. You know, get everybody in their own hotels and separate and bubble and go play. I mean, once you lose, you go home. And then hopefully you have seven good tests in terms of, hey, if you're good enough to go to the postseason, you do it. But to say I don't want to play in the tournament, I think it's absurd. But call me crazy. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
The Packer and Durham Podcast.